This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We'll break into the markets, look at cattle on feed, and also the latest happening with grains. Bob Maurer in just a moment. First, Mary Conklin, University of Connecticut talks risk management education partnerships.
We're going to do a couple of field days this coming year, focusing on climate mitigation strategies and crop insurance. We're going to do a series of crop insurance case studies using what-if scenarios. We're doing an online course of 12 modules that covers crop insurance, risk strategies, climate adaptation, financial management, benchmarking. We are also going to be teaching undergraduate courses, the small fruit and the vegetable course. We're going to be meeting with those students and talking to them about risk management. And we have a crop insurance app. We are updating that one this fall and also getting it translated into Spanish.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago, and we'll have contact information for Bob in just a moment. But first off, cattle on feed came out on Friday after the close, and it seemed to be a bit bearish to start the session, but cattle futures ended up closing higher for both the fat and the feeders. Break it down for us. What'd you see?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that assessment, and you're not the only one to have that as a takeaway, meaning pretty much a push for the on-feed numbers as of August 1 relative to trade guesstimates going in at about 100%. Marketing's plus or minus a few tenths of a percentage point off from expectations for the month of July, that is. But the placements number was the one that was different. And not only was it higher than the average trade guesstimate, it was higher than the range of estimates that I have. So you are dead on right that normally that would be a bearish element in the market. However, it's interesting because I've been doing this for quite some time, and this report is notoriously given the name of cattle on fade. So many times the market, sometimes they get a surprise, but many times the market has done a pretty good job of discounting expectations ahead of the report. And maybe this is one of those scenarios where it was sell the rumor, buy the fact situation, and the market was able to actually had already basically found its footing. It didn't need this new data to kind of give us an expectation of even lower prices. So that's a bit of the psychology behind the marketplace. So maybe that's a little bit what's happened in this scenario. When you look at other things impacting the market, and particularly I like to watch where the cash is because that's where the rubber meets the road and business is getting done, to the point of the market shaking off some bearish information. Last week, the five-day weighted average ended at about 185.20-ish. That was down about $3.40 week on week. Box beef cutout values ended about 317.45-ish or 317.34, a little bit lower than the previous week. Not much, all right, but still just a tad lower. Maybe you can call that a push. And then in terms of the cash, what cash is out there in terms of deals that got done in the south and in the north, and most of the business was done earlier half of the week, in my opinion. The southern trade was 183, down $2 week on week. The northern dressed was 293-ish, down $5 week on week. So the reason I give you all that data is, again, the market had already been pushing lower. It'd been seeing what's happening out there in the cash cattle land. And perhaps even though the number was bearish, the market didn't have enough new steam to push into new lows. So that's just one train of thought. I mean, obviously, in hindsight, you can always come up with things. But I guess the takeaway for me is that regardless of the market, and we could be talking metals, we could be talking softs, we could be talking the grains and oil seeds or these livestock markets or even some of the indices, for that matter, the financials. If you get bearish news and the market reacts bullishly, that should get your attention. It doesn't mean that the market is necessarily going to turn around on a dime. Obviously, it is that day. But at least it should get your attention that the market's shrugged off either some strongly bullish number and moved down or some strongly bearish number like this appears to be. and moved higher. So it's going to be a wait and see to see how we trade this week. We did get other data, mind you, that might have also had a cause and effect in terms of the market trading the way it did today, and that was the cold storage number. And it basically showed that total red meat supplies and freezers were down 3% of the raw data in terms of the raw materials in the freezers. We're seeing a bit of a decrease. And I wouldn't say those are necessarily abnormal trends, but nonetheless, it's still less, right? So perhaps that's also working its way into the marketplace. Technically speaking, the market has been trying to find some footing. If you look at the October live cattle futures, it bottomed out mid last week after a pretty good slide to the downside, but then shrugged off the weakness into that midweek and had a decent day on Thursday, a little bit of quietness on Friday, probably ahead of that report. And today we see a push to the upside. It's got some work to do in terms of, technically speaking, getting through some moving averages and some overhead resistance. And then in terms of the feeder cattle, not too dissimilar of a chart pattern with a big slide to the downside over the last few weeks, especially starting beginning of the month when the stock indices had that rip to the downside, right? Indices have recovered, but the livestock markets quite haven't done that yet. But I kind of get the feeling that if the macro markets can hold up, all right, and how you want to interpret that trickling into a bullish psychology from those who are, you know, buying out there buying beef at the grocery shelves or at the restaurants, then if the market can't hold up, maybe we'll start to see some kind of sustained gains as they look at that on the board and the equity markets are holding steady, you know, near towards the highs like they have been. So we'll see how that all plays out. So we'll wait to see where cash starts trading this week. We got the reaction from the reports that came out, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. A couple of other things. U.S. dollar basically at our lowest levels since last December. So we've seen the easing of the dollar. And I'll use that as a transition to move into grains and oil seeds. Corn lower on Monday. Soybeans, soy meal, soy oil all higher. Wheat was mixed with hard red moving higher, the other two moving lower, and cotton lower. Is there a theme there? And then could the dollar potentially play a role in helping us move some of that out?
I think it does. I think net-net it does. Now, is it a one-to-one correlation? I don't think so. And I think that's pretty easy to see, at least over the short term here, when you look at what the dollar's done and then you look at what the grains and those oil seeds and the thread that you just mentioned have done. So back in the end of June, we're trading up towards 106 in the dollar index. And the dollar index is based on its value relative to a basket of currencies. And anybody who's interested in digging into the details on that can go to the ICE US exchange and kind of see what those ratios are. But nonetheless, it's against the basket of currencies. And back in July, like I said, 106 was the level. Now we're sitting at, ease of math, we'll say we're at about par, so at 100. So that to me is minus 6%. It was at 106, it's at 100. So it's down 6%. Look at the board on December corn, look at the board on December wheat, and look at the board on November soybeans. Are they up 6%? The answer is pretty clearly no. So it can definitely have an impact, and I guess one way to know that is if you are an avid reader of much research that is pumped out there on commodity markets like I am, that is typically one of the data points that is cited. So, you know, Fed's doing what they're doing. Powell said what he said. Indications are for a decrease in rates, at least for September, right? So you're following that narrative. That should devalue the U.S. dollar a little bit because interest rates determine currency flows. That's what I learned when I was in college taking my finance courses. And it seems like it's worked out pretty well that way in terms of things are supposed to move the way they're supposed to move for the value of the dollar relative to rates getting lower. But again, it's not correlating one-to-one, if at all, to the grains at the moment. If the dollar stays down here or even moves into lower territory, obviously I think that corn, wheat, and soybean prices and commodity traders are going to take more note and more attention and give it maybe a greater weight but it just hasn't translated quite yet. And you see that. I mean, you just mentioned it. Corn prices for the December contract, new lows today. The soft red winter wheat, new lows today. The soybean prices, not new lows, but sitting within, you know, 10, 15, 20 cents from lows that were established a very short time ago, just about a week, week and a half ago. So there's plenty of work that needs to get done. So we'll see how that plays out. The commodity markets don't live in a bubble, besides what could be happening in the financials and such, and what's happening with the dollar, you know, vis-a-vis the interest rates. There's psychology involved with these markets. It's geopolitical things that are involved with these markets. So it's not always easy to figure out which one of those particular inputs is going to have the most weight at any one time. So that might have been a long answer to your short question there, but, you know, I think that's where we're at right now. I think right now what the markets are telling you is that supply is in the driver's seat. And whether you look at ending stocks for this marketing year, the one that were the 23-24 or the expectations for 24-25, and you look at the ending stocks or you look at the stocks to use ratios, we're not sitting in any kind of situation where it looks like we have any kind of concerns at the moment for supply availability. And if demand stays the same, then obviously that's telling you that prices need to move a little bit lower in order to satiate some demand, which we're starting to see in soybeans, but we need to see if it has legs.
You know, really, if China would just get to the point where they buy 10% of their soybeans from the U.S., that would make a huge dent in the market. But that's what ifs, and that's kind of like hand grenades, right?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Well, maybe it's not like – no, I'm not sure if it's like hand grenades or not. Because horseshoes in hand – anyway, the point is – there is demand out there, just not necessarily for the U.S. Okay, if we want to talk one-on-one with you, how can we do that?
Sure. Pick up the phone. Give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. You can reach out via email also, which is bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at mandukatrading.com. Or you can ping me through the website, which is www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Again, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago.
Sorghum farmers, it's your time to shine. The 2024 National Sorghum Producers Yield Contest is open for entries. Compete in divisions like irrigated, dryland no-till, dryland tillage, and food grade. No matter where you farm, east or west, let's yield greatness together. Contest rules and entry forms are online at sorghumgrowers.com/yieldcontest. Enter by November 26 and harvest the win.
Attention High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association proudly presents Your Legacy is Tomorrow's Water. We're joining forces with partners across Texas to restore 50 Playa Lakes, crucial for recharging the Ogallala Aquifer and supporting our unique wildlife. Be a part of this transformative initiative. Visit playasworkfortexans.com for more details. Let's secure our water legacy together.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago. Online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, or strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless when you visit Rascal Supply Co. in Lubbock. Rascal has truck accessories, truck beds, bumpers, bed covers, lift kits, toolboxes, leveling kits, and so much more. Come see us at 10307 North U.S. Highway 87 or call 806-300-8007 for Rascal Supply.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to the production and domestic availability of eggs,
we are again looking at very tight supplies
and very high prices brought on by the loss of millions of laying hens due to avian influenza. USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham says table egg production July of 2023, last year, 640 million dozen. This past July, down to 630 million, sending wholesale prices through the roof. However, Shagham expects things to settle down a bit in the egg market.
We're looking at table egg production for 2024 to be very, very close to the table egg production in 2023 at about 7.9 billion dozen. And then next year we'll see gradual increases reaching about 8.2 billion dozen in 2025.
And with more production,
we would expect to see egg prices decline.
But he says that's if we have no more bird flu outbreaks, and that's a big if. Gary Crawford, Washington.